And it's an exciting one. It's a big one. And today we have TV and stage and West End star with us, Alex Hammond. So hi, Alex. How are you?
Hi. Firstly, let's backtrack on that. Firstly, take out the star element.
Ben, you've played many roles yourself. You've performed in Matilda, Motown the Musical. You've even been in popular daytime soap, Doctors. But our question for you is, what's the best role that you've played in? Or what's the most significant one? The one that stands out to you the most?
My mum got a call from the Birmingham Mail. Because they sort of got hold of a Brummy actor who is in this show. And somehow, I don't know if it was me or her, but one of us had inadvertently said, we've got 150 members of Friends and Family through the week coming to see the show. But the journalist had written it as, my mum has bought 150 tickets. So it then became, you know, saviour of Birmingham theatre, Lindsay Hammond. You know.
You name it with Denver and Ricky. So hello and welcome to this week's episode of the You Name It podcast. And I'm here with my beautiful assistant, Denver Morton. How are you?
Hello. I'll take that introduction. Beautiful assistant.
You're happy that I've just called you beautiful for the first time.
Well, I know you've also tarnished it by calling me your assistant. And I think we're more kind of co rather than assistant.
Assistant two.
How are you doing, Ricky? You good?
Yeah, I am not too bad. How are you?
Bored. Same things every day. But yeah, we get on. We smile. I've just been cleaning my bedroom and I found £5 under my bed. So all in all, to be honest, quite an exciting day for me.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. But I think it is time to start to speak to our guest we have this week. And it's an exciting one. It's a big one. And today we have TV and stage and West End star with us, Alex Hammond. So hi, Alex, how are you?
Hi. Firstly, let's backtrack on that. Firstly, take out the star element. And secondly, definitely take out the TV element. I mean, my TV career is far from fantastic.
We're a star to us. That's exactly what I was going to say. You're a star to us. And we're not going to let you undersell yourself. You are a star here for us.
Thanks, man.
So if we don't big you up at the beginning, then you're not going to be as open and honest as we go on through.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Give me a nice stroke now, and then I'll talk more later.
Yeah, exactly. Shall we get to know him, Ricky?
Yeah. So, Alex, if you didn't know, at the start of every show, what we do is we ask three get to know you questions just to get you to know you a little bit better, and so our audience can see things that they might not have seen before. So, Denver is going to start with our first question this week.
Alex, hello. So, our first question of the Get to Know You this week is, obviously, you're an actor, you've been at drama schools, you've done it for a number of years now. What is your favourite all-time drama warm-up game?
Oh, God, great question. I'm very pertinent at the moment because I am running so many drama games over Zoom.
Yeah.
So, which, you know, comes with its various challenges.
I was going to say, how does it differ from Zoom?
Oh, it's just a nightmare. Yeah. Especially when you're trying to do drama games with kids that just like turning the screens off. Like, yeah, disaster. But for me personally, I've been really enjoying a game at the moment called This Is Not a Spoon, where you hold a spoon up and you have to say to the rest of the group, this is not a spoon, it is a, and then you have to create a wonderful
from there.
Intricate version of that. It's then followed by the Land of No Spoons, which is where I, as a facilitator, would play border control in the Land of No Spoons. Everyone has to try and get their spoon past border control, and they have to convince me that they have a legitimate reason why they have to carry the spoon across.
Wow. I almost want to play it, Ricky.
I mean,
I almost want to play it.
But our next question, moving on, is a would you rather question, which always comes from me because apparently I am the king of would you rather questions. So We had some sent in to us, and we've got this one, and this is a very genuine one. This is a very short one. But Alex, would you rather have a cook or a maid?
I mean, I just think that's cook straight off the bat. Because I've got, you know, middle class guilt, and the idea of having a maid would just be horrible. gendered in some way. But having a cook for me, yeah, I'm a big, big foodie. Although I do enjoy cooking myself, but I think particularly having had to do, you know, self-sufficiency for the last year of cooking all your own meals, the idea of someone just taking that on for you, and yeah, that'd be...
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because with a maid, they can only clean the house to a certain standard, which would probably be similar to what you do. A cook will be cooking foods to a better standard than you'd be able to, you'd think. So you could take advantage of it a bit more. So yeah, I'd go for cook as well.
Yeah. What are you thinking, Rick?
Well, I'm not sure if people are aware, but I'm a very messy person, as you can see behind me. So I would probably just need a maid. And because I'm living at home at the moment, I've just got both because I don't cook or clean here. So I'm living in the world.
Do you know that middle class entitlement you were just speaking about?
And that's me.
There we go.
I need to grow up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm so glad I turned that question back on.
And I'm just going to pick the maid because, yeah, I don't like cleaning that much. And I think,
I'm gonna give your mum a call at the end of this. See what
God. Oh, no. She'll be waiting out there the entire time, waiting to come and say
waiting to clean your room.
Yeah. Right, so you've got your cook. Now, where are you sending him? Because the third question is, what is your favourite supermarket?
Great question. I mean, do you know, I'm both ends of the spectrum at the same time. I'm loving a bit of Aldi for the bargains, the central aisle, you know, the aisle of mystery.
Oh, yeah. We've spoke about the mystery before.
Oh,
The aisle is
the lucky bit, coming out with a horse blanket and a pair of flippers.
Yeah.
I'm into that. But if I'm feeling really flush, it's got to be a Whole Foods. I mean, I know that's not even, that doesn't really constitute a supermarket. It's not a supermarket, but it is a treat, even just walking around the aisles.
I don't know if we can count it as a supermarket, though.
I'm happy to be shot down on that one.
I think we'll take Aldi. We'll take Aldi, though.
I think I'll give Aldi a big shout then for that.
Aldi taking a slender lead there, Ricardo.
The thing is, a lot of people come on here and just go, Aldi, Aldi, Aldi. We need a brand endorsement from Aldi at the moment. Like, it is the amount of people that talk to us about Aldi, you wouldn't believe it.
Oh, so, thank you. Yeah.
But you know what? We've got to know you as best we can, but I think it's time to get into the actual...
Supermarkets, would you rather? That's it.
That's everything we need to know.
That's the end of the show. That's
the inner psyche of Alex Hammond.
That is the end of the show right there. We don't need to know anything more. We've got it down there. Of course not. We're getting to the actual meat of this podcast, that is...
This is hard political debate. Let's go.
Yes, we're going to talk about Brexit. We're not.
We're going to create a movie. So, Alex, obviously, we sent you over the questions and everything a couple of days ago. So, hopefully, you've had a good think about what you're going to choose. So, who is going to play you in the movie of your life?
So, I suppose I've got to start with the preamble to that. This, I think, this film needs to be a children's film. So, and I'll get into why I think it needs to be a children's film or a family film. But as a result, I kind of want it to be me as a child throughout the film. And I'm stuck between two here. I'm either wanting Rupert Grint at the height of his Harry Potter, oh, bloody hell, Harry, fame.
Yeah.
Or I'm going back to my roots, to my absolute idol, Macaulay Culkin.
Okay.
You know, we're talking Home Alone. We're not talking... You know, a few years later when things went pretty well.
When he went a bit off the rails, to say.
Yeah, I'm talking wholesome, slapping the cologne on his face, Macaulay Culkin, throwing paint cans down the stairs. He's my guy.
See, they're two very different child actors there.
Yeah, I know. I sort of want to blend the two of them all. I kind of want the total charm of Macaulay Culkin and that sort of, you know, American... sparkle, and then I want the like British sensibility of Rupert Grint saying bloody hell and being kind of
It's 2021 now. We can definitely just combine actors together in this animation.
Then we'll go Macaulay Grint or Rupert Culkin.
So with it being a children's film, is it an animation, did you say?
No, I'm still wanting proper live action. Yeah, definitely. And it's sort of a la the, like, you know, 90s children film.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's the, like, the sweet spot of, yeah, I think, got, yeah, power movies. That's where, yeah, I'm at.
Okay, okay. Well, you've played many roles yourself. You've performed in Matilda, Motown the Musical. You've even been in popular daytime soap, Doctors. But our question for you is, what's the best role that you've played in? Or what's the most significant one? The one that stands out to you the most?
Yeah, good, very good question. Two come to mind. The first is probably my first professional gig, which was Taboo, the Boy George musical. And that was stepping out of drama school, thinking I was going to play, you know, the romantic lead, Rodgers and Hammerstein, and then immediately being cast as a drag queen. Yeah. And that just totally subverting everything I'd ever thought that the industry would be, but actually turning out to be the most brilliant learning experience.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly.
But did you have to get all dressed up in drag and everything like that?
It works. I had a lesson from Boy George's personal makeup artist, and she sort of taught me how to do all the drag makeup, of this 80s style drag makeup, incredible wigs, amazing costumes, and just that, like, I'll come onto this, I think, probably later, but, like, the feeling of escapism that you get from acting, yeah, I really got from that role, because it was just like, this is so far from me, and I just get to completely step into the shoes of someone I would never normally get to inhabit.
Which is exactly what acting's all about, isn't, yeah, it?
Yeah. Exactly. So there's that, and then also, you've already mentioned it, but Matilda was a huge learning curve for me, pushed me to my, not to my limits, but it certainly pushed me as a performer and pushed me, yeah, to always strive for better acting choices. And I got to play Mr. Wormwood, which was just joyous. And so much of it is about interacting with the audience and with the kids. And it was just, yeah, and playing a baddie, like playing a baddie is just the best fun.
What was it about that role that kind of stood out so much over the others that you've done?
I think it was the level of extremity that you had to go to with the character, so that, yeah, every time I'd speak to the resident director or whoever, they'd always be saying, you know, you have to push it further and further, because in order for Matilda to live in this world where she's seen as the kind of the staple and the norm and the nucleus, everyone around her has to be absolutely huge all the time and at such an extreme level of emotion. So it was just a real challenge, but just so incredibly rewarding to get to play someone of that ilk and someone who's that awful, that appalling. Yeah.
So you kind of thrive off that, kind of being able to, as an actor, which so many people do, of really taking it out of your naturalistic personality and then just, yeah, that all over it.
Well, you know, I come from a family where you're encouraged to be always polite, and, you know, everything is about making sure that you're the nicest person you could possibly be. So actually, to play someone who's just awful, like, yeah, you know, just an absolute asshole, is just, yeah, great, you know, and that's,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
and it kind of gives you license to get to try out those personalities that you would never be brave enough to do, yeah, in your own life. So, yeah, yeah.
On talking about Matilda as well, this is a question that I wanted to ask you. I'm going to ask it straight away. So, what is it actually like being in a rehearsal room, knowing you're going onto the West End? Like, for me, if I was in that situation, I would be absolutely terrified. I know, also be like, I'm here, oh my God, but what is it like? What is it? Is it just a normal rehearsal room, or is it like, is there something different, unique about it?
So the Matilda one was particularly extraordinary, because they replicate the entirety of the stage, including everything that's flown in, all of the set pieces, everything is in the rehearsal room. Yeah. It's a huge, almost feels like a warehouse. You know, I'm used to being kind of in a crappy, stuffy little rehearsal space where everyone's with their scripts and you're kind of using chairs and tables and lampshades to try and replicate. But that was the first time where I was like, oh my God, they've literally just built the stage for us to rehearse on. So that, yeah, that was the first, I think that was a real, like, fairy tale moment for me of like, oh, this is exciting.
Going back to when, like, you're in a rehearsal room, like, you think about, like, at uni when you're just using a chair and it's also a table and it's also, yeah, it's also a clothing rack and everything, and you're really, exactly, use your imagination.
I mean, as both of us who did sausage as well, we know what a sausage rehearsal room is like. So imagine going
sausage
is kind of, imagine going
never
from
escape the sausage, Denver. You can
never, we'll never escape the sausage.
So going from
I've actually got that tattooed on my back. led to some rather awkward conversation.
But going from a sausage rehearsal room to a West End Matilda rehearsal room must have been. Oh, I mean, I hope it happens to me one day, but I bet it must have been such a. You must have felt like, wow, I've this is it. Like I've done it. Like I made it. Like I bet that felt like an amazing moment for you.
Yeah, it was really amazing. But then by the same token, sort of everything's different and nothing's different as well. Like so much of the rehearsal process is like being in a sausage rehearsal. And actually you still get handed out your scripts and you're still doing all your kind of normal get to know each other, playing a bit of zip zap boing. So even though the kind of the stakes are higher and there's more money in it and it's a bigger production, there's still the same heart as there would be in an underground production.
Yeah.
I'm going to get really a bit overly romanticizing here, but like I just think that's the magic of theatre.
Yeah, of course.
You can create any scale of production, you know, still as long as you've got the right
dynamics are always there.
Exactly. Yeah. And so our next question is, even though we've already talked about the genre being a children's film, so the next question is, where is it going to start? What is the starting point of the film for you? And why is it a children's film and why is it going to start from here?
So the reason it's a children's film is that for me, my discovery of the brilliance of the dressing up box was my like the beginning, you know, if this was my origin story, my kind of Marvel origin story, the dressing up box was the moment where I realized I just really like dressing up, playing other characters. Yeah. And I didn't really ever question it. And just immediately, you know, was sort of putting on, you know, mum's knee-high boots and a cape and putting these fantastical characters. Hence probably actually why I enjoyed playing a drag queen so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's where the film would start, I think, in a sort of single shot scene of me, you know, finding this sort of dusty dressing up box, possibly in an attic, which isn't how it actually happened, but I like the idea at the moment. And, you know, dusting it off and lifting it up and it just being full of kind of bejeweled capes and cutlasses and eye patches, and suddenly like realizing there was a whole world of fantasy available.
I suddenly picture then there's like a 90s indies music soundtrack at the back, and there's like a Billy Elliot type montage at the beginning, sort of thing. And you're just trying to stuff and being all the different characters and stuff. Yeah.
I really can see Rupert Grint doing this as well.
Rupert Grint's made for this.
Yeah.
And Ricky, sorry, can we just say, an actor who we know?
I know, honestly, we're gonna let you into it here. People have been coming on and telling us actors who we have no idea who they are.
Oh, really?
And it's like, are they trying to like outwit us? Or are they just being like, do they expect us to know who this person is all the time?
I think that's such a typical actor thing to do. Trying to say that, you know, that I know more people than you. Which legitimizes me being in the industry. Yeah, I'm not into that. I'm going very, very obvious references.
So, I know this is where the stories are going to come in now. So you know how we're going to start with you opening this box. Me and Denver were talking earlier about how our films would start. And Alex, I just want to say this because I've got you here. Like, you were such a big inspiration to me getting into acting and me carrying on and like going to drama school and going to drama. And like, I mean, I think I've seen you in like pretty much all of the shows you've been in, maybe the ones that I wasn't allowed to go to. So
I've seen
quite a lot, and it's a pleasure to have you on. But I think one of the moments that I really want to talk about with you, which would be the start of my film, is when you took me to the Alex, and that's why it's called the Alex, because you always perform there, and you took me to the Alex and got me to perform, helped me to learn the Miss Saigon song on the West End stage, on the Alex stage. And I know that is a very little thing for you to have done, but to me that was like the biggest moment of my life. Do you know what I mean?
I remember it really clearly. And to be honest, I think my thought behind doing that was actually putting myself into your shoes at that age. And for me, the idea of like standing on one of those stages was just unthinkable. So I felt really privileged for me to be able to do that and facilitate that. But yeah, I really remember that. I mean, I also think it might have been a bit of a killer cure moment. It's very possible for me to put you on that stage, getting to sing Miss Saigon, and you would never have sung again.
I remember that moment. I remember telling everyone in school, being like, I'm going to the Alex, I'm doing this. And I remember being like, and then I think that's what gave me the confidence to literally go, I'm going to, like, Because I assume you had the same conversation with your parents, like, I'm going to do drama now. This is what I want to go and do. And it's like, I think from that moment, I was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to put all my time and energy on. So I just want to say, like, that would be my starting moment. And I feel like I have to tell you why you're here. Just
can I play myself in your film? Or are you going to have me played by someone else?
Well, we'll find someone not as handsome, but, you know, like, near enough, you know, a bit younger, maybe. I don't know, who would you want to go for? Maybe, like, Jake Gyllenhaal, get him back. You know, he's a friend of us, so we'll get him on, and Jake Gyllenhaal can come.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I think we've got the budget for him. So,
great.
No, get Rupert.
Then maybe I could play, you know, I could play him in the story of his life, and there'll be a whole sort of trade-off.
Well, you get Rupert Grint in, and it's kind of like a prologue of this movie. They kind of, like, connect to each other, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe a bit like Boyhood. We sort of, you know, have Rupert Grint through the years just progressively playing different versions of me.
Well, yeah. that is lovely. Look at Ricky.
I'm blushed.
That is why you were. That's why at the beginning we called you a star, because to Ricky you genuinely are to him.
Oh God, you make me seem like a fangirl.
You're doing that to yourself, Ricky.
I know.
we've already mentioned so much that you've done already, but for you, what was the kind of defining moment, the so-called plot twist of this movie? Where's the drama coming from it?
So I think there's a plot twist moment. So I imagine the first section, as you said, we've got the kind of the montage with all the different adventures and sort of everything going off and me putting on various ridiculous outfits. And I think there's a plot twist moment of, I kind of imagine it that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm dressed as a pilot, and one of the adventures is kind of flying over a desert island. It's landing on the desert island and suddenly finding loads of other kids all dressed up as well. Yeah. And actually, at the risk of pushing the sausage agenda, this is the discovery of the sausage factory, which I joined when I was 8 years old. And it was the moment of, like, oh yeah, this is actually something that other people like doing, and I can do this with lots of other kids. Not so much a plot twist as it is like just a kind of seminal
realization. Yeah. And for those who missed or haven't listened to Joe's podcast, could you explain to us what sausage is, so people aren't getting a bit confused by why there's a sausage factory in a kids' movie?
Absolutely. I'd be glad to, for the sake of a lot of your listeners. So the sausage factory is the youth section of the Sully Hill Operatic Society. So sausage is spelled SOSAGE. And it is a brilliant, amazing youth group run on a Saturday by all sort of voluntary leaders who are all generally have been part of the adult society. And they just facilitate being able to put on full productions for kids twice a year. It's absolutely the reason that I ever got into the business. But a lot of my absolute best friends came from there. Great place.
Yeah, great. Grassroots theatre, Ricky, is what they call it in footballing terms.
Grassroots theatre, yeah, exactly. Yeah. and Sunday League theatre.
Sunday League theatre.
And as another sausager over here, I can totally agree with that, because I think I joined as soon as you left. So it's kind of like how it's like it goes from generation to generation. I joined when
passing on the sausage.
Yeah, I was going to say, sausage.
I was about to say, passing on the sausage, and we just continue going on.
We've got too many.
I mean, that is the danger of the name, is that you just get yourself into hot water so often, unless you've previously clarified what you're talking about. Even the word sausage factory is problematic, let alone I'm a sausager, I'm passing on the sausage.
Oh, the sausage.
Sausage.
Just keep saying it.
Keep saying sausage. That's obviously a big moment for everyone when they have that realization of when and why they want to do everything within acting. But one thing, when we were kind of looking at your career and everything, Ricky's mentioned it, is performing in West End. And as someone who has studied drama myself, that stood out, and I was like, whoa, that's massive. And you've even had TV credits and things like that. So was there a moment in that kind of stage of your career that stands out as a defining moment where you went, you know what, I'm doing all right here?
Yeah, I think it's always kind of through the lens of other people, which sounds like an odd thing. Like, there have been some amazing moments where I've got, you know, stood on a West End stage and just thought, oh my God, this is just extraordinary and kind of harking back to that like childhood version of myself in the dressing up box, and then like the idea of ever imagining being there. But then at the same time, it does, to all intents and purposes, become a job, and you get so wrapped up in the auditions and the rehearsals and everything else that you sometimes stop to remember or forget to stop
what you're achieving,
what you're actually getting. So I kind of, sometimes it's more through like my parents and through friends who give you that reminder, and they're like, oh my God, this thing that's happening to you right now doesn't happen to any, like to so many people. And that I do try and like subscribe to, if I'm doing any teaching, really try to say that to students of like, if you have those moments, just stop and realize how unbelievable they are, because the industry is so fraught with uncertainty and unpredictability that actually those little pockets are really, really special.
And was there a moment where, I don't know, you got a review that went really well, or kind of something where you did get that praise, where you felt that moment?
I had a really sort of out-of-body moment. I was doing a production of A Little Night Music at an amazing theatre called The Watermill in Newbury, which is gorgeous, sort of just out of the way, parochial, wonderful theatre that creates great creative stuff. And this production was, it's a Sondheim show, and there was rumour that Stephen Sondheim himself was going to come to see the show. He'd seen a previous production at the Watermill, so there was this huge buzz, and he'd just been to see Follies at the National, so we were like, he's in the country, he's coming. And I think that may have sort of spread to a bit of theatrical hearsay. And somehow, I don't really know how this happened, but the New York Times ended up coming to see our production.
Wow.
And I got a personal mention in the New York Times review of A Little Night Music. And that was a real moment of like, oh, this is cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Do you remember what it said?
I don't, to be honest, but
I'd know it word for word. I'd have it on the wall.
If you call Lindsay Hammond, she'll have it word for word. Although, in fact, reviews have got me into trouble via my mum previously, going back to the Alex Theatre. So when I was performing in, I think it was Seven Brides or Seven Brothers, my mum got a call from the Birmingham Mail, right? Because they'd sort of got hold of, a Brummy actor who is in this show. And somehow, I don't know if it was me or her, but one of us had inadvertently said, we've got 150 members of friends and family through the week coming to see the show. But the journalist had written it as, my mum has bought 150 tickets. So it then became, saviour of Birmingham Theatre, Lindsay Hammond. is sort of propping up the finances of the Alexandra Theatre just to show her son how much she loves him and how proud she is. So yeah, mum had a great moment.
I was going to say, did she ever deny it, or did she?
Never. Never printed a retract.
Unbelievable.
So obviously, Alex, we talked about how the industry.
I'm sorry, Ricky. No, let's just look at what you've just done there. So we've just restarted. Recorded, and you put up three fingers and went three, put a second finger up two, one, and then five fingers. That's not how you count down.
that
was ridiculous. Had to be mentioned.
We'll just leave that in the edit, shall we? Because that kind of works.
It did really throw me. I couldn't work out if you were hands up or very confusing.
I don't think my hands work with my mouth at the moment. I'm just a bit.
Thank God you're a podcast presenter.
I have a face for radio, and that's it. And that's all I'm going for.
Not fingers to the TV. Sorry.
No, we were talking about struggling through COVID, Ricky.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking.
Exactly. Bring it back to the gritty realism of life.
Bring it back to what we need, gritty journalism right here with Deborah and Ricky. So obviously we talk about how the industry in acting and musical theatre changes so quickly. And obviously, at the moment, we are going through probably one of the most hellish years the world has ever seen in our time. And for you, you were about, had it just opened, Pretty Women had just opened on West End, and then boom, COVID happens, it's all off. How do you get over that? Is that the word? How do you get over that? How does that feel? What was that like?
It was completely and utterly bamboozling, for want of a better word. it was, yeah, man, we were Monday, I think the 16th of March, we arrived at the theatre. We knew that like stuff was going on and there was sort of the possibility that there was going to be some kind of closures, but we continued as normal, got through our physical warm-up and then sort of saw all these sort of looming figures in the wings appearing. And then steadily our producers just wandered onto the stage and the music was taken down. And then we just had this incredibly, it was sort of calm, but it was out of body conversation where we were told, right, everybody, the theatres are going to be going dark immediately. Please pack up your things. We'll see you in 2 weeks. That's it. And we knew that there were, all the audience were outside and they'd literally just locked the doors.
On the day that the announcement was made.
Right. Yeah. So it was completely, completely bizarre. And also at the time, we all had this thing of being like, great, 2 weeks off. Amazing. See you in 2 weeks. So no one really took anything from the dressing rooms. We kind of, took what we needed, but everything's still there, all gathering dust. My coffee machine's still there, gathering dust. Utterly infuriating. yeah, man. And then here we are, months and months on. Still,
literally, it's been a year.
A year yesterday.
All just went 2 weeks.
A year yesterday.
Man.
That is. And is there rumours of it coming back? Is it confirmed that it's going to come back when theatres reopen?
I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to speak out of turn, but there's been a lot of social media coming from Pretty Woman, as for a lot of other shows, is like, get ready, we're coming back. Which is really incredibly exciting and so needed right now. No, there's no kind of hot off the press scoops for me, because we're as much in the dark as anyone else.
And who are you playing in Pretty Woman?
So I'm sort of a member of the ensemble, so lots of fun little cameo parts. And then I'm the first cover for Edward, who's the Richard Gere role. So we were kind of just right in the middle of understudy rehearsals, just got to the point that we were feeling, right, we can do this. This is really going. We've been open. We'd had previews for about 4 weeks. So we sort of just got the momentum going when we suddenly stopped. And it's been a really odd experience. Sort of, it kind of felt, I guess, a bit like grief along the way as well, because it's sort of taken away so quickly that it takes a while for that dust to settle and realise actually a lot's going to change.
It's really interesting. You've just mentioned it there. Being a cover for someone, obviously it's not something that we've done, and we were talking about this again earlier. What is it like having that? Like, has there been times you sat 3 o'clock in an afternoon not knowing, and bang, you're going straight on stage? Like, how quick is the kind of turnaround with it?
Yeah, to be honest, 3 o'clock is a luxury. There have been a number of times. My worst was about a third of the way through production of Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, and the lead just lost his voice, literally mid-song. The whole, it just went, and he just had to run off stage and just go like, you need to go on now.
Mid-show?
And then it was curtain down, 10 minutes reset for me to just get my mic on. And then I had to go into the show, but with the energy of already being a third of the way in. So it was really disconcerting.
There's people in the audience going, but what does this mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Learning story here.
Yeah, 10 years younger.
is there a part here, and you probably might not want to answer this, but obviously playing cover for different people, is a part you going, I hope he gets a call today.
Always. You're always stood there just, and the worst thing that an understudy can do, but so it's like a classic technique, is to just say like, are you feeling all right? Or do the thing of like, listen, mate, don't worry.
And I guess it's fair to say that one of your favourite TV shows would be Dancing on Ice as well.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Matt Water, for doing so well.
So what's this all about?
So this same production, Seven Brides, and Sam Atwater was playing the title role, well, not the title role, the lead role, Adam. And he was also doing Dancing on Ice at the same time. So it was a kind of weekly ritual for the Hammond family to gather and watch Dancing on Ice and to just aggressively vote to make sure he stayed on the show. Because the further he got, the more shows I got on as the lead.
And how far did he get?
almost all the way.
Yes! Yes!
hence the 150 ticket in Alexandra Theatre.
Of course.
Everyone is just voting on what is it? I remember getting called. I remember when my dad was saying, we've got to vote on Dancing and Ice. We've got to get
Alexandra's
on. That was great. Oh, that was... I remember
you just
that.
Don't think there's that side of theatre going on, but of course there is.
Of course that's going on. Alex, so we've gone off your film here, but like I was so interested in the fact that we've opened this box and you've been trying on different costumes, and then you go on this aeroplane and you find this island with other people who have the same interests of you, and it's all childlike and kid friendly. So we're getting there. So we've had the plot twist of you finding this moment of becoming an actor. I've lost my words there. I'm trying to move on to how is this going to end for you? What is the end of the film, or what is the next part for you? Because you can't really end the film because we haven't got to the end. But what is the end, really?
What is the end for you?
I literally lost my words.
How do you predict you're going to die? I would say that actually my film at the moment would end at a crossroads moment, a sort of. You know, quite a classic trope of many movies. But for me, because I've sort of found myself now still so completely, utterly in love with the theatre, but I've also kind of found a second stream of creative passion in teaching and creating workshops and running workshops for young people. So I've sort of found myself trying to work out what's the right way to go. And that's kind of where I imagine my film at the moment would end.
Well, you've already got your sequel. You've got like a Karate Kid type.
Yeah, definitely.
Set up there,
or sort of Black Mirror style, where people can choose which ending they prefer.
Yes, there you go. Which is Ricky, an anthology, not anthropology.
Yeah,
very different.
Very, very different things, Denver.
I made that mistake last week.
Alex, talk about workshops. So you've just started your own company called Activate, and. So what is this all about? Well, I know it's creating workshops with you and your fiance and putting on and working with kids. How has that been over COVID, and what have you been doing like workshop wise?
So the idea behind it originally was that we kind of realized that we've been alongside acting, as all actors do, we'd always have our kind of side hustle, and that for us had always been teaching. We'd done all these workshops with different companies, picked up these skills along the way, and sort of developed our own style really of how we love running workshops, and realized the kind of the power of theatre within that, and within helping students with various aspects, whether it's character education, confidence, public speaking, learning how to get to grips with Shakespeare, all these different things. Actually, just a bit of theatrical influence can really help. It's been a really odd experience getting to that point and getting really excited about the launch of it, and then COVID hitting, so then having to kind of deviate and go off on a sort of creative tangent with how that would work. But we've actually found that we've still been able to do loads of stuff on Zoom, and you know, harking all the way back to the This Is Not a Spoon game, it's just been loads of that kind of stuff, which actually you still find you can connect. But
it's just bringing people together, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. But safe to say we are just desperate for a bit more face-to-face and the possibility of working more kids.
And I think what is really good to bring up here is that you are obviously a very talented singer and actor, and I wouldn't be doing myself a justice if I couldn't show you something here, Alex, that I am really, really proud of. And so if you didn't know, and this is going to shock of Denver over here, is that me and Denver did a musical together at university. Now, as you can see his face there, Denver has never been in a musical before, has never sang a song before, and we've got a little clip for you, and we were wondering if you could watch.
You're actually doing this to me again.
Yeah, this is the second time I've done this, because it is just unbelievable. We were wondering if we could show you this clip, and you could just tell him how he could tweak his voice a little bit to make him sound a little bit better.
So get on with it.
I needed you, do I still now? My life was empty, but somehow, could this all be worth it without you?
I thought that was all right, that bit.
You know what? Yeah.
Was it?
Deborah, I think you've been really, you know, you've been, this is horrible for you. And actually, I think you've done a bloody good stab at that. But the one thing I want to say, if in terms of my honest thought, is what you did brilliantly there is you brought what we call cry quality into your voice, which is something that we really subscribe for quite often. And it brings that sort of rich...
So it shows my vulnerability sort of side.
Exactly. Yeah. And it shows that you're really connecting with the story, which actually is so much more important than the quality of the voice, which is not to say that the quality of the voice...
I'm not making any comment on that.
But all I'm saying is you're an exceptional storyteller and you should hold on to that.
But that would come down to the excellent director who told him to act in that
style. Ricky, I've said it before and I've said it again.
Ricky, were you at the hands of those two?
We wrote these songs.
Yeah, so that was my show. I directed that masterpiece, as you can imagine. And it was just a fun fact about it. It sold out and Frozen on Broadway didn't on its opening night. So I will take that as people wanted to see that rather than Frozen. So
yeah, and I would say Denver is sort of the Elsa of the university scene.
Well, there we go. Exactly. I'm going to let it go and move on. See what I did there. Frozen. You. Connected. what's the song for your movie? I imagine it's not me singing.
Well, I mean, it could be. There's a sort of brilliant tragedy to having that at some point.
Not if you want it as a kid's movie.
I think, for me, it's got to be the music of Stevie Wonder throughout. You know, the various emotional tangents and roller coasters that Stevie takes his listeners on, I think really perfectly be the auditory background of my story.
Yeah, I already see it. Hey Duke is your opening montage song. It has to be.
Good time.
I just picture it. Da, na, na,
na. Da, 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 just me dancing around in a pair of boots and a cape to Sir Duke.
Perfect. And so we've got your soundtrack. We've set your movie up. It's a nice little child family-friendly movie. We've got the journey that he goes from.
Rupert Grint.
Rupert Grint
and Macaulay Culkin have fused together to create...
I feel like Macaulay might have lost his edge here. I think Rupert probably taking the four. So let's sack off Macaulay. He's a bit of a loose cannon anyway.
Yeah,
Macaulay can be the cover, the understudy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rupert Grint will definitely be. He's not up to much at the moment, so we'll see what we can get a trailer together for him. But yeah,
but to sum it all up, and it's the big one, Alex. What is the title to this film?
I mean, it's vague, but it's intriguing. I would say, and I just want to call it The Dressing Up Box.
I just think
it's just got to be simple, pithy, and it sort of sums up my entire life, really, that everything is revolved around the dressing up box, whether through childhood, through professional life, or, you know, through university. I was never out of a costume, really. Yeah. And I would pass that on to everyone listening. Spend more time in the dressing up box.
Dressing up box, starring Rupert Grint. Yeah. That is brilliant. Well, yeah. I love it, because what it is, what's a bit different to the others is, and this is what everyone does, they astound me each time, but the theme of this is not one that we've had before, like a children's TV one. It's really kind of creative, there's a lot of thought put into it, but it still tells your story so well. Thank you.
And because I was going to say the most wanky, drama-y thing I was ever thought into my head here, and I think the whole movie is like, which everyone will get, is such a metaphor for like what actors actually are as well. Like they are just professional dressers. They are just dresser-uppers. Yeah. And then when you move to that world, when you go on that journey to that island, you're just with other professional actors doing what you want to do. And you get to that crossroads of deciding what I want to do and what's going on next. And it's a brilliant film and I would watch it. And I don't know about you, Denver, but I would stick this on, get Pixar on this, Disney on this, on Disney.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would make loads of money. So, Alex, I just want to say a massive thank you for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure to sit and have a chat with you.
Yeah, thank you.
And discuss musical theatre and theatre in your film. And we wish you the best and hope everything else goes well. And it's been a
pleasure. Yeah, and best luck with Pretty Women.
Thanks, guys. It's been an unrivaled...
Pretty Woman. Pretty Woman.
little Woman.
Good Luck with Pretty Women. No, that's not the play. I just mean Good Luck with Pretty Women in general. That's just...
That was just a side note.
Just anyway,
back to what we were talking about.
Just best of luck with Pretty Women. That's what I'm saying.
Thank you. I'll tell my fiance that you send your best regards.
But yeah, thank
Every
you.
Week I stitch myself up.
Oh, you do. But thank you. Thank you very much. And we will see you next week. So, Denver, that was the end of episode.
Now you take it, Mickey. Come on.
And that was absolutely brilliant with Alex Hammond. And he had so many things to tell us and so many...
Amazing. It was brilliant. It was fantastic. Like our socials, just Facebook,
and
Insta,
I think Denver is trying to rush out of here because he wants to go and eat.
I just want to eat.
But I think it is worth mentioning saying that if you haven't followed us on Instagram, it is Denver.
I know by now. You name it pod. You name it dot pod.
And if you have, if you want to send us an email, Denver, what's the email?
People don't use email anymore, Ricky. You name it dot pod at gmail.com if you
and
do.
And if you want to like, subscribe to the video.
Yeah, can you subscribe? Because we've had like 24 subscribers for ages, and just give us a few more, please. Come on.
Denver has said that if we get to 50 subscribers, he will buy someone a racing car, a toy one. But who will buy?
Yeah, go on, I'll do that.
50 subscribers will get
50 subscribers will buy you a toy racing car.
If you like a post that we post out, don't know when that's going to be. But I think we should end on some final words of wisdom with Denver Morton.
Why? Why have you done this to me?
So, why have you done this to me is the words of wisdom for this week from Denver Morton. And we will see you next week.
What a shambles.
What a shambles of an ending. See you next week. You name it with Denver and